This is Yasa Sagonige,
a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Aginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks of Mid-America. And our guest is Adam Rubel, Sauk Bay. And go ahead and introduce yourself and tell the folks about your internet website, Earl, and tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, first I'd like to start off by thanking you for having me on your show and giving this opportunity to represent my organization and the people that we work with and support. I help run a nonprofit organization entitled Sauk Bay, Organization for Mayan and Indigenous Spiritual Studies. Our focus is working on the rescue, preservation, and appropriate sharing of the ancient traditions of Native peoples, primarily within the Americas, but we do what we can where we're called. And our main focus has been with the various Mayan peoples in Guatemala. We do have a website, which is www.sacredroad.org, which is one of the key things that we do is help to disseminate information, teachings, prophecies, and warnings directly from the people for the public. Our organization has been around for about 5 years, and we just try and do what we can where we can. So,
how does Sauk Bay get started?
Well, it was something where I was actually traveling down in Guatemala with my wife after having had some previous connection with some of the Mayan elders, the Mayan priests, including Carlos Barrios, who many people may be familiar with through his writings and teachings. And down there actually for a gathering of indigenous elders from across the Americas, from Colombia, Peru, the United States, Mexico, Canada, and it was during this time that we were approached and asked to help, particularly with the Mayan people, to help them with the rescue preservation, and also to help them to reach out to get their messages across, and particularly to young people. Back then I was a little bit younger than I am now, so they... You know, they felt that we might be able to find that vehicle. My wife and I came back to this country and said, you know, okay, we'll do that. We have no idea how, but we wound up settling in New Mexico and figured that a nonprofit organization was the appropriate vehicle to accomplish what we had been asked to do. So that's how we went about and formed Sauk Bay.
You've done a great job. It's a wonderful website.
Thank you.
And was really exciting when we saw it rolled out, and now were you raised here from your accent? Were you raised here in the States?
Yes. Yep. I was actually born and raised in New Jersey.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Oh yeah.
And you have a neutral accent. You could be from Utah.
Yeah.
And what was it? North Jersey, South Jersey, or East Jersey?
Yeah. Yeah, North Jersey, about 20 minutes outside New York. You know, so I guess part of it is probably that cultural diversity. Part of it is probably traveling around so many different places that kind of blended and lost accents all at the same time.
I heard him joking yesterday on National Public Radio that North Jersey and South Jersey are the same as East and West Jersey, because they were two separate colonies at one time, and you'd think, you know, there was a clear delineation between north, south, east, and west, but it was actually split diagonally, so you had a north that also could have been west, and a south that also could have been east, you know. But it's kind of a joke in Jersey. There's a guy who's just written a book called The New Jersey Encyclopedia, and it was kidding around about it, but that's a beautiful place. Did you ever run into the guy that wrote all those books about the wilderness, Tom Brown Jr.?
Tom Brown. No, I never did have an opportunity to meet him.
A Stalking Wolf was his.
He was from the southwest part, I think. So
Pine Bear.
I was in the northeast, so we're different.
That's a fascinating story. So, I know in this last, what has it been, about 6 or 7 months now that Grandfather Carlos has been really active in working with Earth Changes TV.
Mm-hmm.
Really excellent vehicle to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more than a little jealous, but I told you so. I'm just kidding. But more power to him. More power to him. That's just fantastic because, geez, I can't imagine that Earth Changes TV doesn't have anything less than 100,000 people on their mailing list. In effect.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm not saying just about Earth Changes TV, but with the internet in general and the way that communications are set up now, the way that so many people can be reached, so quickly and seemingly effortlessly. I know it takes a lot of effort to put a show together and to get it out there, but it's amazing. You know, when you're thinking that we're able, in part, to help share what's coming from, maybe a village that doesn't have electricity, where the people don't know how to read or write,
okay,
and they're able to share what they have with people from all over the world. I know even through our website, we start to get messages from countries that I really haven't even heard of.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, you can go on. I tell people every month, and we send out a little report on what's going on, and I send out the link for the statistics. And we've had 100. I think there's only 140 countries in the world, and we've had visitors from 120 some odd. 126.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. Sometimes it's like one from Mongolia, but they came, And you think about, wow, man, we're really getting out there, and this is what I envisioned originally, and we wanted to keep the cost to zero.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted people there in the outback of Australia with, they're on modem, and, they're on it like 28,000 baud. We want them to hear the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, so we keep it free, and we keep it listener-supported, and We just don't needle people quite as much as NPR does for those people. As long as we keep it alive, that keeps me happy. But now, what's this I hear about some of the elders, or was it Grandfather Carlos that was in the international news because of the mudslides down there?
Yeah, I just got off the phone with him a short while ago. The situation down there is actually seems to be quite a bit worse than anything that's been reported in the news.
Yeah.
In fact, I was just talking with him and finding out, and was, it's shocking. They still don't even know the extent of the damage because just about a day ago, the rain finally let up after like a week and a half.
Well, a lot of those towns are just abandoned, and they're turning them officially into graveyards.
Right.
Now, about a week before the mudslides happened, I was watching a show on some cable channel,
mm-hmm,
about how every year the traditional people make a pilgrimage up to the mountain glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this at great effort and sometimes great expense, and it doesn't matter whether they're traditionals or they might be Catholic, still go and do it, just for the reason to head off exactly what did happen this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was a fascinating show. I should have gotten the name of the program, but a lot of times these shows are only on one time, and
right,
can't warn anybody when they're coming on, but then I was just absolutely shocked. When the mudslides happened, it was just after I saw this, and I went, oh my gosh, is this because not enough people went to ceremony? And I know this is what the elders are concerned about, being born and raised, I was born white, raised in Christian society, raised to believe that all this is BS. And then, like I was telling you before the show, I asked you how old you were.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told you that I was more or less activated when I was 30. I was told when I was 26 that when I turned 30 and had been in a certain place for 7 years, something very important would happen, and it did, and that was the year I started walking the Red Road in 85. the spring of 85, and that's the age that you're at right now. But you got started even earlier, and that's a real honor. That's a real tremendous responsibility, and you know, young folks like you are rare, very rare. And but you know, I think you guys like you are becoming more ubiquitous, and thankfully. We need to have lots more like you. We really do. So I understand they're having a gathering on Wednesday, and we Prophecy Keepers Radio might get a chance if we can work out the technical details. Marshall Masters, who's been a wonderful supporter of Prophecy Keepers, he runs the internet radio show over at YOWUSA.com, Your Own World USA. Commonly referred to as Yowza. And Marshall uses Skype.com, S-K-Y-P-E, which is a voice-over internet protocol. And he calls all over the world with it. And I haven't been able to work out the technical things. The sound is still kind of spiky. But I'm going to get on the stick, and I've got broadband. So I should be able to tweak the sound to make it better than it was. I haven't used it yet. But I hope to be able to get that done so we can record, you know, what's going on down in Wednesday.
That would be terrific, because this is really, it's the heart of it. It's the source. There's several different councils in the different regions of Guatemala, and they are gathering this week. And, you know, so it would be an opportunity to speak directly with the people through their translators as they speak in their various native tongues.
I got a call out of the blue from a gentleman from Argentina that said that want to know how to get a hold of Red Elk, because some people say he's the most famous medicine man in the world because of the media attention he's got. I mean, when you got 10 million people listening to you, things happen. Well, he was telling me, and I can't remember the name. There's several, of course, several different traditions in Argentina, but they said they had a grand council of five different traditions, and that everybody down there just loved him. want to know how to get a hold of him. So anyway, as it turned out, the guy was in Oregon at the time visiting his daughter, and he went up and saw Red Elk and had a message to take to him. And I'm hoping to get a hold of Red Elk here in the next few days to find out what that was, because it's really interesting. This is what it's all about, folks. This is the condor of the south flying with the eagle of the north. And it's not that we're giving them much as they're giving it to us, because we've really forgotten and lost our way up here, mostly in greed and politics and civilization, so-called, is really making inroads into traditional areas, particularly in Mexico. Grandfather Jaime Perez was on the show a few months ago, and he said they've got four-lane freeways now going through some of the most rural parts of Mexico, and he says the traditional people there are being... Well, he says, you'd think that if people came and gave you a Coke or gave you a coat or gave you some food or whatever, that would be helping, he says. But he says it's negatively impacting their traditional way of life down there. And he says the trash is just unbelievable that's being thrown out. So there's a lot of things to deal with, and not a lot of time. Time is... it's kind of our friend and kind of our enemy in this effort. Anyway, I've talked enough. Go ahead and tell me some more. I get the feeling strongly about things. I rattle.
sure.
So tell us some more, Adam.
I think that's accurate. What you described in Mexico is really happening to indigenous peoples everywhere at an accelerated pace. I mean, it's been happening, for thousands and thousands of years. I would say from when the concept of colonization first took hold, way back when, you know, up until the present day. The problem is right now is the scale on which it's happening, and you know, the dwindling diversity of culture and perspective and,
yeah,
and spirituality. You know, as a people, we're not much different than a forest. And when a forest becomes homogenous, it becomes susceptible to a single disease that can wipe it out. As a people, if we have this homogenous culture, we become susceptible in the same way. And this is what's happening. And not enough of us are realizing how important that is, and why we need to stand up and help these traditional people to not only survive, but to survive in a fruitful way that respects their culture, that honors the ways that they have, the relationships with the earth, with each other, and the things they have to teach the rest of humanity that we've forgotten, as our monolithic society has kind of moved forward for such a long time.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I know Maria Gurley just got back. She had a shamanism conference in Peru, and I know Benny LeBeau was invited to go down. I don't know whether he was able to raise funds to do so, but we'll be interviewing him. That man has been all over. I've talked to him in the last couple of weeks. We're trying to interview him. He's just been gone from elation to exhaustion. I think we're finally going to be able to get a chance to talk to him tomorrow.
Great.
But these elders really, they it's their life. It's what they do, and you really got to respect them for it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
You know, it's like when Red Elk's in his 60s, and, you know, he was asked to go spend a couple, 3 months in Canada. I mean, here's a man who's in his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He's also disabled and diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's sleeping in bathtubs and campers and, you know, that's rough, huh?
Yeah.
When they're having to go back into helicopter, back into areas to go to certain sacred areas and you really have to respect these people.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's also a circumstance of the time that we're in, where traditionally when I also speak of you know, traditional cultures, I'm not just speaking of you know, a single race, of a red race or, you know, a black race, but I feel like we've all come from traditional cultures. We all have that heritage.
Yeah.
Whatever our ancestry is, but at some point things have deviated. But within that traditional culture, it was always the community that would support the elders, that the elders wouldn't be left to sort of, you know, fend for themselves and figure out a way. And it's been taxing. I mean, I know of people that have been 80-something years old and have to, you know, work the fields every day and have this incredible knowledge, but really aren't able to, you know, have as much of an impact because they still need to go out and support their families, and,
yep.
you know, rather than having their community support them.
Yeah, that's true. That's certainly true, and a lot of them that are in their 80s are just unbelievably spry. I know,
mm-hmm.
I'm reading Lucille Taylor Hansen's book, The Ancient Atlantic, and, you know, back in the 40s, you know, she met one elder that was in his 80s, and, I mean, the man was jumping around like a rabbit.
Uh-huh.
Just absolutely, just like he was a man in his 30s.
Uh-huh.
And, but, you know, they've gotten away from, in the last 50 years, especially from the traditional diet, and this one elder I knew who passed away, I guess, about 12 years ago, he was Bear Clan Dene, and he lived in Cortez, Colorado, and he was diabetic, and I think they were on, he was on dialysis, and I think he'd had a couple of amputations, and, you know, his father and grandfather had lived until past 100, and he was 61, and he was dead before he was 62. So his, you know, the way he viewed it was that he came to be an example, and he gave up that 40 years that he could have taught to make an impact, to show people, you know, what happens when the traditional people get away from a traditional way of life and their indigenous foods.
Mm-hmm.
And, not that white is bad. He just says, you know, white flour, white sugar,
right.
and all that commodity foods is just killing us.
Right.
I think he said 40% of the people on the res down there were diabetic, and about 15% of those were on dialysis. That's just dire.
Yeah. In this country, especially on all the different reservations, I think even up in South Dakota, it's probably even higher.
Yeah.
And you know that's a shame. It shouldn't be that way. But
well, and it's and I know here in the States, and Benny LeBeau is going to be talking about that when we get him on. He went up to northern Minnesota where they had the school shooting, and it's just the absolute hopelessness that Native kids are having to deal with nowadays, you know. And I can't help but think that, hey, you know, if they've been taught, you know, about the hope of the prophecies,
mm-hmm.
maybe it would have made some difference. But so many Native people in the Americas have just walked away from the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, at least down south of the border, you know, they might be Catholic, but they'll amalgamate the two religions.
Well, that has actually been running into problems as well.
Yeah, it does. Chiapas. Yeah.
And in Guatemala, particularly with the evangelical churches moving in.
Until they came in and started, you know, missionizing, that caused problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Shootings in Chiapas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess Chiapas. I guess it's been at least 20 years. They kicked the Roman Catholic priests out. They just taken over the church. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, anybody that comes in there tries to be a missionary. They've been shooting. You know, they're up to here with it. You know, and they're not putting up with it anymore. What do you? Maybe you can give us a little bit of what's transpired since our last interview with Grandfather Carlos, of what he's been doing, what you've been doing.
Sure. Well, you know, the main thing I would like to get out is what we've been asked to get out, and you know, this is from what the elders there have to say, and the main thing is that they say they've given their real messages. There's nothing new that's coming. There's nothing new that's going to be coming. They've kind of given their guidance to humanity, and that message is that we need to move towards finding balance. We need to move towards finding a harmony and creating that on all levels. We need to do that very quickly, You know, on a global scale, that there's the ones that have power, and they would rather see that this Earth be destroyed than have to give up that power and stand on this planet as an equal with everybody else. They say that we have to move towards that balance, and, you know, it's our job, those of us that are aware and that become aware, to do what we can to create that and to create a balance with, you know, our families, our communities, and our Mother Earth. You know, so the main thing is that they've given this. You know, there isn't any new teaching that's going to come about it. There's nothing, you know, real shocking revelation that's going to come. Now, having said that, there is also the prophecies which talk about us being in this time of transition, of change, of the potential for cataclysm. As you know, and your listeners know, prophecies are given not to scare people, but to give them an option, to give them a warning, because they're never set in stone. There's always the ability to change the outcome on anything. And so, you know, the path that they've outlined is the way that they see that harmony happening. What has happened recently is that there's been more disturbances on the Earth. You know, and this is what they say, you know, this is now entering a time of intensification, and particularly the next 18 months are going to be even more dangerous, particularly with respect to the possibility of, you know, wars breaking out. Not meaning that it's going to happen, that it has to happen, but meaning that we really must become vigilant to ensure that it doesn't. You know, they see things moving on the Earth as well. You know, they said first it was going to be the water, then the Earth is going to shake. You know, talking about earthquakes that'll happen, and they say it's going to happen on you know, the five different continents. They say the next thing that we're going to see soon is the fire, or they say the fire, which refers to volcanoes erupting. And, you know, they say watch Yellowstone and watch other places, because it's just going to become more active. You know, the whole of the Earth is shaking and moving. You know, so these things are here. They're happening. They're happening to people. You know, we're seeing also diseases, you know, breaking out. You know, I don't want to be gloomy and pointing out all the things that are going on, that continue to go on, that will go on. But, you know, it's something that all of us, all the listeners should realize is very real. It's very much here, that we have a responsibility and a choice as to what actions we take, how we live our lives, and what role we play in how these things do or do not manifest. So, you know, this is the main thing they want, is to do what they can, because this is their responsibility, is to make that call to humanity, that we will listen, that we will take actions, that we will hold our leaders accountable to making decisions that take this into consideration, rather than, you know, saying, well, if we look back and say, well, you know, I should have done this, I could have done that, you know, we have to realize we're given an opportunity now, and how we work with that, how we seize that is up to us.
Yeah, from what I've heard and read, the elders are really kind of disappointed that, you know, well, you know, we've given these messages out, now it's time for you to do something, because the shift, if it's going to happen, away from the worst case scenario is going to happen, because people are going to hear about this and they're going to change their attitudes. And has there been any effort to get any of the elders or get particularly Grandfather Carlos, say, on Coast to Coast AM?
No, we haven't had an invitation for that. You know, we haven't had a connection for that. you know, but I think what you point out is correct, is that they say, you know, this is just a time for action. You know, you can talk about it, you can theorize about it, you can dream about it all you want, but the reality is the only thing that's going to make a difference now is taking that action. You know, I think a number of years ago there was this New Age fantasy going around that, you know, these changes are going to happen and it's going to be really dramatic and instantaneous, and only the people that were, you know, New Age people would be fine and enlightened beings, and everybody else would just be washed away. You know, the earth is calling to us and just telling us that we have to deal with reality here.
Yeah, and it's like the Bible says, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it's things, bad things happen to good and bad people. And,
right.
Well, I'll tell you what am I going to do. When Red Elk was ill a few months ago, I came into possession of the phone number for George Murray's producer. Now, I haven't spoken with her in probably about a year. I'm going to call her.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell her what's going on and recommend that they give you guys a call. And I've also emailed back and forth a couple times with Ian Punnett, who just recently interviewed Red Elk. And he loves Red Elk, and it was going to go out and see him. So
great.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's, let's see what we can do, you know, because,
great.
You know, 100,000 people's great, but 10 million is a lot better. Especially if they could get them on, you know, every few months. And,
sure.
The Hopi elders, they're not going to talk anymore. They're past, you know, they're at Robert Goswell's house right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they just aren't interested in jawjacking anymore, because they really don't feel that people are paying that much of attention. And they feel that what went out was really kind of twisted,
mm-hmm.
you know, for people's self-interest and everything. So I don't think you can expect to, unless you change your mind, I really don't think you expect that you will hear from the Hopi Sinem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not real happy with what's happened. They said what they were going to say back in 90, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and I don't know if we'll ever hear from them again,
right.
In the media, which is kind of a shame. And so I'm glad the elders in Guatemala are talking, and I hope they keep talking. I know, you know, some people, listeners out there, you know, I can't emphasize enough how plugged in these people are to what George Norrie would call like the ethereal internet. I believe it was Alberto Villaldo that took a picture of the globe, and I think he was talking with the Kogi elders, and this is going back, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And the Kogi immediately said, oh, yeah, you know, we're here. And, I mean, they know what the world looks like. And they said, you're from up here. And they, you know, they put their finger right where he was from. And then they start talking about these wars. You know, they said that, oh, yeah, well, there's the people here, pointing to the United States, and their finger went over to the Middle East, you know, over to, you know, Saudi Arabia. And he says, these people over here, he says, they're coming after you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is, you know, 15 years or so ago. And it's absolutely amazing, you know, the stories you hear about
mm-hmm.
people going to a sweat lodge, and all of a sudden they find themselves, you know, sitting around the fire, but they're in outer space looking down on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until something like that happens to you, you know, you think, oh, that's BS. But hey, you know, if you were raised in the Christian tradition, you know, you've got to believe what it says in there, that the Creator provides prophets, always will provide prophets, and He will never do anything unless and until He tells His servants, the prophets, what He's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
The hard thing, the hard pill to swallow, is the prideful pill, is that He's not much talking to the European Caucasian prophets anymore. He's talking to the little guys. He's talking to the black people in Africa. He's talking to the humble people and using the humble people to be the conscience of the people of the world and try to wake them up, and the meek. So we just got to keep on keeping on, and because it's who we are and it's what we do. And hey, have you got a family?
Yeah.
Your wife? You got any children?
No children yet.
Nothing yet, huh? Okay.
Nope.
And do you have a? Yeah, I know you help administer this nonprofit. Do you have a day job, or what other kind of interests do you have?
Yeah, I do have a day job. The work for Sauk Bay is and has been for about 5 years voluntary. I work doing web communication stuff. I do it with both nonprofit organizations, and I'm actually doing it with a retreat center out here in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Great. What's the name of that retreat center?
Sunrise Springs.
Okay. I know there was a really nice one for sale not too far from Las Vegas, and I was just drooling.
In Okamura?
Yep.
Is it
for sale?
I think it is. I haven't seen it in about a year and a half.
Oh,
but
it's a beautiful place.
It's amazing out there.
Oh, if I had $2.5 million, that'd be the first thing I'd do. Oh, it's a beautiful place. And, well, you live in a beautiful place there. And I think, as far as earth changes go, you know, that part of New Mexico is going to be pretty safe. There's there are a lot of areas in the... and pretty close by, you know, particularly around Albuquerque and Sandia, I really wouldn't want to be around. Main problem is water. But they have, Okamura I love because they had some good water sources out there and lots of trees, lots of apples. And you could bring a lot of people in there and as a refuge, build it up pretty quickly.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Yeah. Well, you know, One point I always like to kind of bring up is we get a lot of people that ask us, where should I move? Where's a safe place to move to? And, I really, truly don't believe that it kind of works like that. That if we start to seek out places, particularly if it's based in fear, if we're afraid of something that's going to happen where we are, anything really can happen anywhere.
Right.
We just need to do the best we can where we can. If we listen to ourselves, we'll know where we need to go.
Absolutely.
Where we're drawn to go. And if it's meant for us, if everything else crumbles and we're meant to survive, we'll survive.
That's right.
If nothing crumbles and it's not meant for us to survive, we won't.
That's right. That's what Red Elf says. And that's what I've always said. You know, I kind of started walking the I used to call it the thinking paranoid road back in 1. And, I went through all the emotions like everybody and dragged food stores around from pillar to post. But once Creator started talking to me, and even then, you know, creators start talking to me in 83, and I didn't even really know what was going on. I didn't have a clue till maybe 92. And even, and really didn't really know till 95. And even after I knew it was Creator that was speaking to me, I didn't, it really didn't dawn on me until through just a couple of years ago that, hey, it doesn't matter what you do or where you go, you know, all these things that you might want to be relying on, you know, they may be there for you and they might not. Because you could be in your car 50, you know, even 30 or 50 miles away from your house when it hits the fan.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, they're useless to you. But if you're listening, you know, and you folks out there, you know, the majority of folks out there were raised, you know, reading the Bible, there's umpteen accounts in there that talk about the people that Creator wanted or that were listening. He would come to him in a dream the night before, and he would say, you know, hey, look, you know, this is going to happen. It's time for you to get up and get out and go somewhere else. And they did, and they were fine. And that's, yeah, that's what I'd like to see everybody doing. It's just that they have to believe that they can get plugged in. It's your right. It's your birthright to have that direct connection with your Creator. And, I guess we'll see. Looking forward to seeing what happens Wednesday. I don't want to cut the interview short, but you go ahead and talk as long as you want to. But,
sure.
Can you think of anything else? Is Creator or Spirit telling you anything to say?
There is one more thing that, you know, is important for me to get across, and that is, you know, the recent mudslides were devastating, and it wasn't just mudslides, it was flooding, bridges, the entire infrastructure of Guatemala has been essentially destroyed. The Carlos told me that there's at least 100,000 people homeless, if not more. You know, the number of dead is well into the thousands. You know, in fact, there was a medicine man, Don Antonio, who lived in Santiago Atitlan, who we were close with, and about 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, was the last time we were out there visiting with him. And, you know, he knew all the plants and the ceremonies from the Tutu Heal people, and just a kind, jolly man. Shortly after we had left him, you know, about within a month later, he was assassinated by a fundamentalist who, you know, believed that he was doing devil worship, and they shot him with, you know, 9 times with a silver bullet or something, you know, horrific.
Unbelievable.
And so he was in this area in Santiago Atitlan, you know, right by this, you know, the Great Lake, Lake Atitlan, where a lot of the mudslides were. You know, we heard that the rain there was caused floods of running water about 16 feet high coming down the mountain, and his whole surviving family was lost from that. You know, the devastation has just been terrible. We've been asked to help.
Oh, the Don Antonio's family?
Yeah.
Or the shooter's family?
No, Don Antonio's family.
Okay. Because I know he was up here. I'm aware of who you're talking about. Actually, his picture's on the Prophecy Keepers library CD.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was, I think he was head of the Mayan Council for a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he was actually, you know, a humble man. We've been to his house and, you know, just, you know, the typical kind of shed that the people live in, but, you know, he was on a council with Nelson Mandela and the Dalai Lama.
Yep.
You know, just incredible, and you know he did have opportunities to make his way in different circles. So you had known him?
No, I knew of him.
Okay.
There had been quite a bit of internet coverage. I can't remember his last name. I believe it started with an X.
Esquinas.
Iskinus, and yeah, there's several pictures of him. And I'll see if I can find him, by the time people hear this interview, his picture will be on the page that we're listening to this interview with, so they'll know who we're talking about. But
right.
Yeah, he traveled extensively. I believe, you know, he and Don Hoonbots and Willer Huayta and these kind of people, they were all over the place for quite a while. Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. That kind of reminds me of the story of another elder that we interviewed. He was Nicholas Chong, who lives in New York City now. His people are Salasaca Aymara people from Ecuador. And his birth was prophesied, and when he came, his people educated him in the traditional ways, but they sent him to, also to the Catholic schools. They wanted him to be able to walk in both societies, and when they achieved a government-to-government relationship with Ecuador, he was their first tribal chairman. I believe he was reelected also. But he says one night, he said the banditos came. Well, they were actually government elements of the government special forces, and they said that they ordered him to leave the country. They said, if you don't get out of here, we're going to come in and we're going to kill everybody in the village. So he just took off into the forest and walked up through Mexico, hopped the border, ended up coming up to New York, and he runs a defense council out of a storefront in New York City. He was very active in the United Nations. And so, yeah, these people are persecuted, and of course, you know, a lot of it has to do with the oil companies.
Oh yeah,
that's you know, that fundamentalist guy. It may have also had to do with his job too, you know, and you know, being a Christian fundamentalist might have fueled the fire to it, but these.
Right.
Indigenous people, they're fighting encroachments into their territory, which is sovereign, or at least as sovereign as nations, you know, the non-indigenous nations allow Indians to be nowadays, but they still allow encroachment to cause problems and injuries and murders and everything, and that was an atrocity. And like you said, that's like going and shooting the Dalai Lama.
Right.
Well,
but what I wanted to also get across is that we've been asked to take donations for the
excellent
what's called the Cofradía in Santiago, which is this community that was hard hit. The Cofradía is kind of like the I guess like the clan. Of traditional keepers that maintain the ceremonies and everything, and they're asking for donations to help rebuild, provide housing, help with relief, provide food for the people. Apparently, almost all the houses were destroyed, and people are in shelters and the remaining structures that are still standing.
Oh, it's worse than Afghanistan, but Afghanistan kind of eclipsed the whole thing in Guatemala. Which is it happened, but it's unfortunate. But these kind of things happen. You know, people have forgotten. So, folks, let's that's what we'll do. That when I call Coast or producers, I'll let them know that the elders down there would like to ask for donations. Maybe they'll help get him on.
Yeah,
good.
That would be great.
Good, because. You know, a dollar a person, 10 million listeners. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
that would go a long way to helping.
You could rebuild 100
really
communities. You could rebuild 100 communities with $10 million.
Yeah.
Very easily. So we'll do that. Well, I'll I'll get back with you, and let's see what happens for Wednesday. I'll get on the stick and tweak my software and hardware to get the best sound possible. And there's from Skype, FKY.com. It's 3 cents a minute to call anywhere in the world. But I tried it once, and the sound wasn't real good. It was kind of echoey, but there is a process you can go through, troubleshoot, and I just haven't bothered to do it yet because, I mean, this was easier. You
know? Right.
And the cost was the same. But sure. I haven't had to call Guatemala yet, so I got to get on the train. Well, Adam, we appreciate you. We appreciate you, and give our love to your lovely wife, and we want to get busy. We want to see some new little warriors coming.
Right.
And some new little mothers. Hey, thanks a lot, Adam.
Thank you so much.
All righty. We'll let you know when the interview is ready to go up.
Okay, great.
Hey, bye-bye now.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of 2/3 of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Anuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest on Prophecy Keepers this week is Melody Rendon. She's the sweetheart of Manny Two Feathers, the noted artist and elder. And how are you, Melody? Say hi to the folks.
Hello, everybody. I'm great to see you. How are you, Bluewater?
Doing pretty well. If you can, speak as close to the phone as you can.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better. And my wife just asked me a question, and I'll edit that out, so don't worry about it. Hang on a second here. Let me get myself composed. Okay, well, Melody, I understand Manny's been in Guadalajara. And, you know, we, as I was saying before the interview, a lot of times when you've got a married couple and the, let's say, the male might be more active or more public. But, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and I thought you could give folks a little bit of understanding of, I know how much my wife supports me and what we do here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Manny and a little bit about you and the work you guys do together and you know, whatever is on your heart tonight.
Well, I really feel that destiny had a lot to do with bringing Manny and I together in the first place. We met 14 and a half. I feel that Manny and I met, and it was destiny because We met 14 and a half years ago at the Tucson Gem and Minerals Show in Arizona. And from the moment we met, I felt that I had met my other half. It felt like a pair of shoes that I put on and had worn many times before. It was very comfortable. And 6 months later, I had the privilege of taking the responsibility of looking after five of his children from his previous marriage. His wife was killed in a car accident. And here I was, 34 years old, and never been married with no children and an only child, and I was suddenly mother of five children with one on the way. And our lives kind of collided and joined together. I brought experiences in my life, and he brought experiences in his life, and we helped facilitate each other's visions and dreams. I'd always wanted to be a mother, and he helped me realize that dream quite suddenly. I knew him a year, and I was mother of six children, and I helped him fulfill his visions and dreams. He had a vision in the Sundance in Wyoming before I ever met him. And his vision was to help people in all four directions. And in 1994, I established a publishing company called Wukila Publishing and helped Manny get his first book published, which was called My Road to the Sundance. And it was a story of his spiritual journey. But it was really a story that seems to have touched people from all walks of life, people from many different statuses, income levels, from blue-collar workers to Wall Street brokers to Nelson Mandela's office, Robert Redford's office, Russell Means, Dennis Banks. So many people's lives have been touched and changed by Manny's words in his own spiritual journey. It's hard to explain, but I had a background before I met Manny in entertainment publicity, as well as being a writer, published journalist. And I think combining those talents helped me facilitate Manny making his visions a reality. And we've made quite a team. We're a really great creative and dynamic team. Our publishing business is 11 years old, and we've published three other books. And still going strong.
Well, I'd say so. His books are have made a big impact on a lot of people. And so tell us more, just wherever the spirit leads you.
Well, I think in many ways, Manny and I share a lot of common insights, and through his books and his message in workshops and lectures and many tours, it's kind of like it's given me the opportunity to have my voice be put out there along with his. We talk about a lot of things, and we share a lot of ideas, and sometimes I'll be reading a book and it'll impact me in an interesting way, and I'll share those thoughts with him. For instance, one book that's really had a big impact on me lately is the work of the Japanese scientist, The Hidden Messages of Water, Professor Scientist Dr. Emoto, who talks about how his study of freezing water crystals that have been introduced to kind words versus negative words, how it impacts the water and allows it to form crystals or not form crystals. And when you translate that thought from how our thoughts and our words affect water. And then you think of how much water we have in our bodies and how much water is on the planet. Really, our thoughts affect each other. And the whole planet Earth is made up of water, primarily water. And I don't think it's a coincidence that there's as much water on the planet as there is in our bodies. You know, it sort of shows our connectedness to the Earth and to each other. And so when we send thoughts or prayers or positive or negative thoughts in any one person's direction, this book shows very clearly how those thoughts, positive or negative, can impact the water in our bodies or the water on the planet. And I was sharing this with Manny, and because he does ceremony with sweat lodges and pours water, and the water is very important in the sweat lodge because everyone's purified and breathes in this water and they're saying prayers in a sacred way. This message from Professor Emoto has been translated into the native ceremony and how when we hold the sacredness of water and we say prayers in the sweat lodge, that can be carried on outside the sweat lodge with each other. And whole bodies of water, look at the way the water's reacting on the planet right now with the tsunami in Indonesia and with the hurricanes and flooding. You know, water is reacting to the turmoil on the planet. It in effect is answering what's going on internally with all of us. We're in turmoil right now internally, and it's translating into how the water is affecting us. This is my theory anyway, and from what I'm reading and what I'm sharing with Manny. And so when he goes out and he talks to other people, he passes on that message in a sort of a ripple effect, if you will. Pardon the metaphor. But a lot of ideas and thoughts we have and share together, that interaction gets taken out in a good way to other people. And I think that's important, that we share a common goal, and that when people come together in any way, whether it's husband and wife or friends or brothers and sisters or, you know, family members, or whichever way we come together, when we come together for a common positive reason, if we can share that and then send it out to others, I think that thought of goodwill and you know, thoughts of goodwill towards each other can be a ripple effect and actually help promote what we all seek is peace. And I don't think it's that elusive. And I don't think it's too late. I think there's hope always.
Oh, yeah.
I think so many people right now are searching spiritually for answers, and they think all the answers are outside themselves, and really it's right inside. And if we clean up what's inside ourselves, it can't help but affect what's going on outside ourselves.
Absolutely. I know we've heard a few times from Benny LeBeau, and he's spent time with Dr. Emoto, and he, in the last interview here, he was talking about how he's up in northern Minnesota, and they had a lot of problems up there, and they discovered that the water, everybody drinks water out of this one lake, it's used as a reservoir, and someone apparently had been murdered and thrown in the lake, and they said when they took a picture, you know, using Emoto's technique, you could see the face of the person.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it's just amazing. Amazing discovery.
Well, Benny LeBeau actually sundanced with Manny in Wyoming when he first sundanced, and he's mentioned in his book, actually. And they haven't seen each other in years, but Benny's been in contact with us through the Internet, magic of the Internet. And he was very supportive when Manny was ill, not too long ago and sent some really wonderful prayers our way. He's a good man.
Yeah, he is.
Powerful message.
Understand, man, he's been in Mexico.
Yes, he comes back on the 30th of October, and I'm sure from what I hear, there'll be lots of adventures.
A couple of days.
Down to see a Mayan healer who's been trying to get him down there for a number of years, and one of his sun dancers helped him go there, had some air miles, and helped him make the trip down there. And the Mayan healer, his name's Alejandro, said that if Manny did what he said to do for 2 weeks, took the right herbs and everything, his diabetes and high blood pressure would be, if not cured, certainly in a better situation than it was before he left. And he left on the 13th of October, so I'm anxious to see how he is when he comes home. From what I understand, he's had to endure some pretty interesting experiences as far as being thrown out of the scheduling that we're used to. Manny's very, he's not a typical Indian time, if you will, excuse the term. He was in the military, so he's very punctual and very conscious of his time. You know, if he says he's going to be somewhere at a certain time, he gets most angry with me if I make him late. And he's very conscious of being on time. And from what I understand, they're so laid back and so, you know, whatever, whenever. So that's been an adjustment. And probably a good one, because I think we all get caught up in schedules and, you know, sometimes we need to let our hair down, relax a little bit. And as they say, let go and let God, let it happen. So I'll be interested to see what comes of this. And if the experience is what Manny's anticipating or hoping for, then there may be an opportunity down the road for others to go and experience time with this healer in this environment he has. They had a sweat lodge inside a cave where a lot of ceremonies are done, and it's close to the Pacific Ocean. And from what I understand, it was quite an amazing experience. Pretty rough. No electricity, no running water, no... pretty primitive, but interesting nonetheless. So people that were exposed to, like I said, a schedule-oriented world.
That's interesting. Is Don Alejandro... is he the Quiche Maya, head of the National Council of Elders of Guatemala? I know of Don Alejandro.
No, that's another gentleman. This Alejandro is from Guadalajara, and he's a Huichol native.
Okay.
And he works mostly with herbs.
Oh, God.
He's more known for his herbs rather than, I know who you mean, Don Alejandro. A friend of ours was studying under him.
Yeah, Don Alejandro Cirilo Perez and Olaj, I guess it's Oslaj, O-X-L-A-J. But, so he's a Huichol elder.
Yes.
Interesting.
And quite a character from what I understand. A little eccentric and
I'm sure.
Manny said that there was instances where he would say, well, we're going somewhere and we're leaving in a few minutes, and they'd all pile into the truck and wait for him, and 2 hours later he'd show up and they'd go somewhere else. They'd be driving along the road and he would suddenly decide that he was going to stop for an ice cream, and he'd just stop right there in the middle of the road without pulling over anything, just stop, the truck and go have an ice cream.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
There was no rhyme or reason to their visit at all, you know. And so I'm sure it was culture shock for a lot of them, because there was several that went with Manny, and there was Dan from Canada, who comes down to our Sundance here in Pennsylvania. Then there was Martin Herrera from California. And there was two other Sundancers, one from Florida and one from around here. And they all went down, and two of them were there for the first week, and then Martin and Manny and Dan were there for the remainder of the time. So I guess I'll hear on Sunday evening how it all went. I'm most anxious to see. And from what I understand, the experience has changed Manny somewhat. I'm sure everybody's come out of the experience a little bit changed because of being taken out of your normal environment and thrust into another environment. I think that's changed anybody.
Well, I was getting ready to say, you know, we're up here in the U.S., we're in this environment, and it's not a normal environment. And you
right.
you fall asleep, you become unaware. So, you know, he's been awakened for the last couple of weeks, so he's going to be really different. Because, you know,
yeah.
I find myself, you know, the longer, you know, I do this, I become more cynical. And, of course, I was warned years ago that would be my weakness, and that I needed to guard against cynicism and doubt. And, you know, it goes for everybody, but, you know, apparently, you know, so much the more for me. And, but it sounds like he's getting what he needs down there.
Yes, I think so. I think they all needed this experience.
So before you met Manny, you weren't a mom, and then all of a sudden you're an instant mom, huh?
Yes, and what's really interesting about that is I was an only child, and I really had no experience whatsoever in even how brothers and sisters are with each other. And when the five from Oklahoma arrived, there was a girl who was six, twins that were 10, a 13-year-old girl, and a 14-year-old boy. And I was pregnant with my first child. And so my friend said to me that I was just learning how to manifest things. And a year before I met Manny, I had wanted, you know, the whole enchilada. I was thinking I was going to be a spinster the rest of my life. And because I didn't want to just marry anyone to be a Mrs. Somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured that that maybe wasn't my calling, much as I wanted children and marriage. And next thing you know, a year later, I'm mother of six kids.
Boom.
So it just goes to show you, for anybody out there who is single and thinks that your life can't turn on a dime, I'm a living testimony on that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And,
a New York Minute, like Manny and I like to say.
Oh, yeah.
After the Eagles song.
How old was his oldest at the time?
His oldest is now...
I mean, back then.
Pardon?
Back then, when you first got together.
Well, he had other children before these five. But his oldest back then was 14.
Okay. And
was living with me.
Was it a boy or a girl, the oldest?
Boy.
Yeah, so he didn't get as much help as, say, if it was a, if it had been a 14-year-old girl. So, yeah, you were really on your own, you know.
Well, the 13-year-old girl, I must say, was a big help to me.
Yeah.
Because she actually taught me how to play with kids, how to get down to their level, and how to cope with, you know, because she had been the mother figure to the kids for a while, being the oldest girl.
Is she the young lady that's been answering the phone when I called?
No, that's my first child. She's 13.
Oh, okay.
And
she sounds little.
Very, very mature for her age.
Oh, yeah. Well, give her my compliments. I'll tell her I thought she was about 20.
Well, I love that. She's her and my son, as I had another child, Stone, and he's now just turned 9. I don't know how these things happen, but these kids, I just don't know. They just, I can't figure out how it happens. Manny says I've had enough children, and I guess the Creator had other things in mind. But the two that I have with Manny are, they're the only two that are left at home now.
I'll be done.
The youngest one, she just turned 20 in June, and they've all moved on and gone their own way. They have their own kids, and they're much doing really well.
And I've forgotten now. How long did you say you and Manny have been together?
We've been together 14 and a half years now.
And you met at a rock and mineral show, huh?
Yes, the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show.
Oh, yeah, that's a big show.
It really is. I went there in 1990, and I looked around, and I was down there as a buyer because I had a metaphysical crystal business. And I was looking around, and I said to my friend that I was there with, I said, next year I'm going to be here to set up. And sure enough, I was. And being set up was the reason that sort of led me to meeting Manny, because I was selling this item that I had just found, and you know what it's like when you find something new, you almost feel like you discovered it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this new item I saw on the market. I saw it for the first time in Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's called a dream catcher, and the ones that I saw had a little quartz crystal in the center of the web.
Mm.
And I told the person that was making them that, you know, I could really sell a lot of these in Tucson. So I had her make me up a lot and took them with me to Tucson, and sure enough, it was a big seller. And everybody was saying that they loved the dream catchers. Of course, I had thousands of dollars of quartz crystals, and I couldn't give those away. The hottest item was these dream catchers. Well, some woman said, who knew Manny, pulled him aside and said, you've got to go and check out this white chick selling, trying to get it on the native thing. Of course, at the time, I had no idea that I was doing anything wrong. And she didn't realize what she was doing, because she sent him over and he was all confrontational and wanting to know who I was. And I just looked at him like I had no idea I was doing anything wrong. And next thing you know, he was showing me how his dream catchers were and what they looked like, and I said, well, I could sell these by the truckload. How beautiful they are. And next thing you know, we haven't been apart since that day. So a couple of years later, when we had all the kids with us, we were back at the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show, and we saw the same woman and said, now you see what you did?
Yeah, my first wife passed away about 10 years ago, but we lived in Tucson for 9 months back in, I guess it was about 83. And I was working for Heath Consultants for the gas company down there doing gas survey work. And we went to one of those big swap meets, and on the way home, you know, pull out a swap meet, and I saw, you know, those little, it was just like a suitcase, just a zipper suitcase sitting on the side of the road, so I stopped and went back and got it, and there was two or three gems that apparently somebody had thrown it out, I don't know why, but one of them was a nice ruby, you know?
Really?
Yeah, I made about $100 that day at Ruby. So.
That was a find.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know what happened there. But,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, the ruby wasn't any bigger than your pinky thumbnail, but...
Doesn't matter.
Yeah?
That's like finding a $100 bill off the ground.
It was. There was a couple of moonstones in there, too. I have no idea what that was all about.
Wow. Well, maybe you were being guided to look into the world of crystals.
Yeah.
Gems.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of energy in those minerals. Manny's second book was called Stone People Medicine, which was not just about, you know, precious or semi-precious stones. It was about all stones, stone people. You know, Native people, as you know, call the trees the standing people and stones are the stone people. And, you know, they talk about the connectedness of everything. And Manny's book on stone people really was a simple book, but it explained why we're drawn to stone. What is our appeal? Why we feel compelled to pick a stone up, this stone up, and not that one, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it was an interesting book about the stones in our lives and how they come and go, and we feel drawn to one and then we feel compelled to pass it on to someone else, and how stones are used in technology and how they're used spiritually. And the stones are really just a tool, just like anything else. They're not to be worshipped, but they can be used. Manny calls our stones our libraries because they've been around so long. They've absorbed so many things, and if we just learn to slow ourselves down enough to listen, just like listening to the pulse of the earth, listening to stones, we can get information from them.
I know my wife Betty and I, we married shortly after Joanne passed away, and she wanted us to get together. And so we did, and we moved down to southern Utah, down in that beautiful Red Rock country that Arches National Monument. We lived between Arches and Canyonlands, about 22
miles. Beautiful.
It was gorgeous. And we had a friend that had, I guess 15 years previous, he had started leasing a square mile from the state of Utah that had a big sandstone, it was kind of a formation. It was about 400 feet tall at the tallest, and maybe 50 feet tall. It was about half a mile long. It looked kind of like a turtle making from an aerial view. It looked like a turtle making a left hand turn. It was a fantastic place.
Mm.
And he had built. He knew how to mine, so he'd gone in with explosives and a front end loader. He made a bed and breakfast out of it. So we rented one of these houses from him. It was about 60 foot deep, about 30 foot across the front, and had all windows across the front and a door. But in the, you know, we ran everything off batteries, about 20 hours a day. About 4 hours a day, they'd run a big generator. But at night, there wasn't any electrical fields running in the house. And in the morning, every morning we'd wake up and we'd hear this hum. And I could hear volume spikes. Betty would hear the same frequency, but I didn't understand until later that entire area of red sand is just full of quartz crystal. And there's,
wow.
So there's gold down there too. Anytime you see red, you know, in fine crystal, if you see the color red, it's because there's gold present. So after 9 months, we moved about 10 miles away up to LaSalle Junction, and there was a mining company that had 300 acres there, and we were caretakers there for a couple of years. And we were just out gardening one day, and all of a sudden, you know, you'd only get a car passing about once every 4 or 5 minutes. And one night, we were just standing out there, and we could hear it. It was loud. And it was just absolutely amazing to hear this vibration. It was just a steady vibration, and we memorized the tone. And I guess one night, you know, a couple years later, we were watching something about Tibetans, and we heard the Tibetan priest chanting or intoning, and it was the exact same pitch, and their temple bells were also tuned to that pitch. Apparently, it's just the pitch of Mother Earth, but they say
it's supposed to be 8 gigahertz, I believe.
Yeah, I probably can't sing it to you now, but it was something like. I have perfect relative pitch. I don't have perfect pitch, but that's pretty close. Pretty close.
Wow. That's quite an experience.
Oh yeah, we used to wake up to it, and I heard all kinds of interesting things. One morning, I was awake, laying on my left side, and my wife was up in the restroom, and I was talking with her. Had just woken up, and you know that first minute or two when you're awake, you're just still kind of half asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hear the Jews. It's actually a kudu horn, but the Jews call it shofar.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear that blowing in my left ear was in the pillow, and I could hear that, you know, like, and then I could hear her in my right ear. I was just as awake as I am right now, or I thought I was, and it was
wow.
Kind of great. We heard.
Well, you know, the quartz crystals amplify energy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, it's been proven they use it in so many things technologically.
Well, that Tao's hum, you know, a lot of people hear it, and it may be completely natural.
Yes. And maybe you can hear it in places like you were better than you can in the city, because obviously so many power lines and that other hum.
Oh, yeah.
Rounds out, you know, the actual pulse of the earth.
Yeah.
And that's what we've gotten away from. Technologically, there's a really excellent book out by Jerry Mander called In the Absence of the Sacred. And what he basically says is that becoming more technologically advanced, we've gotten away from listening to the earth.
Mm.
It goes back to what we were talking about earlier, and that's listening to the earth, listening to the water, and projecting, we become separate from connecting with the earth and the water.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And because we've become separate from it and we've disconnected from it, this is the retaliation, which I feel is a lot of the earth changes going on right now. I'm a big earth changes buff. I'm always, you know, I was interested in earth changes back since 1979 when a book was introduced to me called We Are the Earthquake Generation by Dr. Jeffrey Goodman. It's hard to get that book these days, but excuse me, it was very interesting. It was before Mount St. Helens blew and before a lot of things really started happening, and he based his book on combining scientific with the esoteric and Edgar Cayce's prophecies and Nostradamus and mixed in with scientific research. And it was very interesting when you see where the planet's at right now. Like recently, the elder Carlos Berrios was talking about how the Mayan elders are saying that all the elements are at play right now. And the one we haven't really heard from yet is fire element. But, you know, the water was the tsunami, the air was the hurricane, the earthquake was the earth, and, you know, the volcanoes are starting to wake up. And who's to say that, you know, this is the long prophesied earth changes we're right in the middle of right now.
I think you're right. So it was called We Are the Earthquake.
We Are the Earthquake Generation.
And
you can find it in used bookstores, maybe on Amazon or one of those.
What was the name of the author?
Dr. Jeffrey Goodman. He actually has a map of how the Earth looked at one time when all the continents connected, how it looked back in 79, and how it's being prophesied to look in the future.
Hmm. Oh, he did this back in, really?
Yes.
Interesting. So are the maps anything like Gordon Scallion's and...
Lori Toy?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Lori Toy's map, the I Am America map, you know, I had that... all those maps posted in my bedroom in Phoenix when we lived in Arizona at one time. And the I Am America map was pretty radical. And the information that she received from, I guess, different sources just seemed a little too far out there at the time. And Gordon Michael Scallion's just seemed doom and gloom, if you will. And I don't, I tend to lean more towards Mary Summerrain's Phoenix Rising material, because there wasn't any date put on it, there wasn't any specifics, it just said to follow the signs. And I think if you were going to make an accurate prediction, because of free will and because of the fact that we all have the power to change things and make things happen or change them or alter the course of events just through the power of thought or power of our mind, from what I believe, I don't think there's really any particular event you could prophesize as to be exactly this is when it's going to happen and what time and what date. You know, I'm a little skeptical about people that prophesize certain dates and times. Now, in Mary Summerrain's book, Phoenix Rising, it's more to watch for the sign, which to me is the same thing. It's connecting with the earth, listening to the earth. What is the earth trying to tell us? What's the water trying to tell us? Pay attention to the elements and the signs in the sky and those types of messages. That, to me, is an indication of true prophecy, in my opinion.
And
I'm sure there's many who would disagree with me, but that's what I feel, and I think Manny and I share in that thought process.
Absolutely. And folks, if you're interested in purchasing that book, you can go to usedused.addall.com and put We Are the Earthquake Generation in the book title box, and then put Goodman in the author. And I came up with 141 copies, and you can get a first edition from $5 to $20.
Wow.
They're there. Yeah, use.addall.com is amazing. It searches bookstores all over the world. They're all hiding. Yeah, they're all, it's listed as a super rare book.
Yeah, I found it at a used bookstore not too many years ago, and I held on to it pretty tightly because it really set my whole path in motion, because I was so fascinated with the contents of the book and, you know, the possibilities of what may happen. And since that time, it kind of set me on my journey.
It comes with soft cover or hard cover. There's a hard cover here. They're a little bit more expensive, but a first edition near fine hard cover, $35, first edition.
Wow.
Not bad.
Well, I've only seen the paperback edition, and like I said, it was really the beginning.
Oh, hey, here's one, $9.95 from Alibris, 1978 first edition hardcover, good condition. It kind of varies,
mm-hmm.
and but they're there, folks. Get them while they're hot. It sounds like an excellent book. I'm going to have to grab one if there's any left.
It is an excellent book, but a lot of the, like I said, the dates in the book, the predicted dates, this is back to 1979 when I read it, have passed. It's like Richard Moon's book, 5-5-2000. You know, anytime there's a date set on it, even the Y2K.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Galleon made it pretty clear that, you know, they all kind of depend on people's attitudes, and we hope attitudes are changing, you know. But there has been some really interesting earth. You know, they had a fissure opened up down in Mexico that was, I can't remember how many miles long it was, and there are things going on.
Well, I've even heard here in Lake Erie, which we're right on Lake Erie, where we live, that there's fissures in Lake Erie. And when I moved here, we moved here in August of 98, and we had been living in California for a couple of months. Previous to that, we were living in a travel trailer. If you can imagine, I homeschooled my kids for a while, and we were living in a 24-foot travel trailer with six kids.
I know somebody that did that. Was five. I'm married to her. They weren't my kids, but four.
Well, it was an experience. The shoes alone just boggles the mind.
Oh, yeah?
With all those girls. But anyway, we were in California in 97, something like that, and there was a 5.3 earthquake, and our trailer was sitting right on top of the epicenter.
Up in the high desert, Oregon?
It pretty much freaked me out, and I said to Manny, I do not want to live here. I want to get out of here as soon as possible. Well, we moved to Erie, Pennsylvania in August of 98, and I'm not lying to you, in September 15th, 98. We had been here a month, and we had a 5.3 earthquake right here, and it felt like like your mind just doesn't even comprehend what's going on because it's such a non sequitur. Being here in Erie and there being an earthquake, it sounded like a truck drove through my house.
Sounds pretty eerie to me.
Took things off the wall.
Yeah.
And I learned something from that because it really doesn't matter where you live. Where you are is where you're supposed to be whenever there's an earth change. If you're not meant to be in the middle of an earth change, the creator or whoever the powers that be will take you away from that situation.
Right.
Even if it's temporarily. And if you're meant to be there, maybe you're meant to be there to help because you've got skills
yep.
in surviving that situation.
Yep.
I could talk all night about this subject.
5.5 and there was stuff stuck off the wall. See, you can have a 5.5 that, you can have a 7 and that doesn't have a lot of horizontal motion, and that will, but that 5.5 sounds like it had a lot of horizontal motion. I lived in California for most of my elementary school and later college, so I only had a good shake up there in Pennsylvania.
Yes, it shook us up big time, and Manny wasn't here. Him and my oldest daughter were at a powwow over in Massachusetts. So they missed the whole ball of wax. But it taught me a lesson because I had always thought I wanted to move somewhere safe. And reading, you know, the maps of even Sun Bear's work on places to go and live that were safe. And Mary Summer Rain's other book, Daybreak. Where was a safe place to live? Where was a safe place to go? And, you know, I kept hearing New Mexico, so we tried to move to New Mexico, and nothing fell into place. And then when we tried to move here at Erie, when we found out the cost of housing was just unbelievable. It's really reasonably priced here.
Hmm.
It's like an undiscovered jewel, really.
Mm-hmm. That's unusual for the East.
Yeah.
Well, it's an old steel mill town, isn't it?
Erie is paper, paper town, and it's GM, not GM, GE, a lot of GE employees here, but it's a small town, it's only 100,000 people for Erie proper, and, you know, you can get a 3- and 4-bedroom house for $30,000.
I got a friend that grew up there and won the Olympic archery, the first Olympic gold medal in archery.
Really?
That was 72. Yeah, they named a. He lived down on Railroad Avenue, and they named town, they named street after him, John Williams Avenue.
My goodness.
Yeah, he was world champion in 71, Olympic champion in 72.
Wow.
Grew up there in town.
Well, it's a nice town. I like it. Coming from Toronto, it's a big difference for me, and it's a difference for Manny coming from Arizona. You can bet on that.
Mm.
He doesn't like the winters here.
So you're from Tirana, huh?
I'm from Tirana.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to say anything about you have a very slight Aruna-Boot-Hoos accent.
Well, I've been down here now for a long time, and I've lost a lot of my aboots and A's, but...
Rub it up again.
So it catches up with me every once in a while, especially when I'm visiting people from home.
Yeah, when I was enough with people back in the early 70s, we spent a few days in Toronto. I still thought it was beautiful. And I stayed with an Orthodox Jewish family. And,
really?
Yeah, I remember the gefilte fish and the matzo balls. It was good.
Oh, yeah, that's a great town for
it was good.
For Jewish traditions. Well, I love Toronto. It's a gorgeous city, and it's very cosmopolitan, it has a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I like Erie, too. Erie's got, we've got Presque Isle State Park right here. There's 11 beaches, and it's just a beautiful park, natural park with wetlands and nature. It's just a beautiful place, and it's just 10 minutes drive from our home. So it's really like an undiscovered jewel here.
Yeah, I
mean. Anyway, I find that if we all just sort of start listening a little bit better to the earth and following that inner voice that we all have inside of us, that these coming changes that we've got will be in the right place at the right time.
You know, you're not too far. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You're not too far from Buffalo, right?
Right. We're 90 miles west of Buffalo and 90 miles east of Cleveland and 2 hours north of Pittsburgh.
You're up in the extreme northwest corner of Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Like right there at the far western edge of New York. I know we've been working on trying to get some Iroquois elders on here, and some of them, I know one of them was a real close friend of two people that have been on the show, but she just, when I talk with her, she's a beloved woman for the Mohawk, I believe, and she just couldn't imagine teaching over the phone. She said she'd never done anything like that. I'd always taught in person, and she just didn't think she could do it, you know, and had, you got to respect that, you know. I drove truck for a while, and I was up there a few years back and stopped off at Tonawanda for the night, and went to the Iroquois Museum up there, and I talked with John Fadden, runs the Six Nations Museum in Oneonta, and his dad, Ray, probably in his 90s, if he's still alive, he was one of the two or three elders that literally brought the Six Nations back, culturally back from just close to completely gone. He's a guy that, you know, bears and wolves and everything, you know, they just come right up to his backyard, you know, one of these guys, eagles, and absolutely.
Wow.
And I'd like to get Mike Bastien, as a close friend of Mad Bear Anderson, and this show is really in the spirit of Mad Bear, and I just heard from somebody that works with him, that lives in West Virginia, and he was going to put the bug in his ear, so we might get somebody from Six Nations on here sometime.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Do you, let's see, have you met any of the Six Nations folks up there? I know Orrin Lyons, I guess, he's a professor at, I guess, the University of New York up there in Buffalo, as I recall.
Well, we just spent some time at Six Nations, but it was in Ontario.
Oh, yeah, they have
It was at the Ashwegan Reservation.
Yeah, most of the Six Nations people live up in Ontario.
Uh-huh. We had a wonderful time there. We were doing a show up there. There was a powwow, and there was all these programs that the res put on for. Of course, they don't call it reservations in Canada. They're reserves, but they had all these programs to help kids get off drugs, to eat more healthy, for families to become more functional. And they had, the Canadian government, of course, has a lot more corporate sponsorship and federal funds to help with these programs for AIDS awareness. And, oh, man, I was just in my glory seeing all these programs and wishing so hard that these programs could be brought back to the States.
Yeah, that's what I hear, is they're better off up in Canada than...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
I know a fellow, Pat Holly, I understand his mom. He lives up there, Ontario. I understand his mom was involved with the mental health program up there on the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat, kind of a wild child, I understand he was at the armed standoff at Oka years ago.
Oh my goodness!
When on the I read the Soldier Fortune magazine article after the confrontation. I mean, they had BB guns and 22s, and they built this with the whole. The whole conflict was over people coming in and building a golf course on a burial. So they
That's just before I met Manny, actually. It was about a year and a half before I met Manny when that all went down.
That's probably, 90, 91, something like that, yeah.
90.
Yeah. And they built the barricades, from the bridge. They shut off this bridge. People had to drive, 30, 40, 50, 60 miles out of the way. Well, the Canadian government came up with our armored personnel carriers, and they ended up opening fire on the Iroquois, and Soldier Fortune magazine went down there afterwards, took pictures. They said, all of the bullets were, they were shot from north to south, against the, they took pictures of the trees, I guess Pat said he ended up doing some time after that, because he was involved in that whole thing.
Well, it was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
For sure. It was a terrible thing. And, even though Canada is miles ahead of the States in terms of how they treat their native people, there's still, a lot of work to be done.
Oh, yeah.
In Canada, at least, they're starting to honor the treaties and give back the land to the native people.
Yeah.
And they do treat the native people better. And Canada has the right idea. Manny became good friends with the Grand Chief of the First Nations. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a man who's elected to represent all the native tribes of Canada. He's the one representative in Ottawa, in the capital, the voice for all the tribes. Now, can you imagine if you're in the States, if one person could be elected to represent all the tribes in the States? Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a pipe dream, but they've done it in Canada for years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about Ovid Mercury, who was the Grand Chief when we lived up there, and he'd read Manny's book, and was actually moved by it as well. But it was, he was a Métis.
Mm-hmm.
He was a mixed blood. And for him to become, I think he ran for something like 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, every so many years they have to be reelected in. And it's decided by all the tribes. Now imagine that. It's done in ceremony and it's done, with drums and an agreement that, he's voted in democratically by all the tribes uniting. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, there's two federally recognized by Canada Métis National Council and another one, and one of them actually says they exert jurisdiction over the Old Louisiana Purchase.
And really?
Which would technically give them some jurisdiction over the early Cherokees, the Catua Cherokees, intermarried with French prior to Louisiana Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're enrolling anybody from down here, but they do recognize. See, they recognize, you know, Métis as being a completely different culture that was an amalgamation of the two cultures.
Right.
And they had a nasty shooting war up there in Canada years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing history. They're amazing people. And Red Elk works pretty closely with one of the Cree bands up there. And I think it's Treaty 6 The Cree signed, I guess, back in the 1860s or 70s with the Crown, and they recognized the Queen as their clan mother.
Huh.
They have since rescinded that, and see, they're working, they're talking about sovereignty, but the more they get involved with it, the more they realize they're just not ready. But they do have a very fine attorney who is a Métis, and who's an international law expert, and she said that she's gone into court sometimes, and her mouth moves, but she's not talking. She says someone else is speaking through her, and she's
what?
Every time that happens, she's just absolutely astounded and confounds the Canada lawyers, and she's made a lot of headway up there.
Mm.
It's amazing. And, but they're just...
There's something to be said for matriarchal societies versus patriarchal. And I think, going back to the original reason why you wanted maybe the feminine perspective in the first place, is that I think we're needing to move more towards the feminine aspect of life on this planet in order to help heal the Mother Earth.
Well, that's what happened up at Cree. You know, the chief had been chief for 25 years, and he was given advice, you know, by a friend of Red Elk, who's a friend of mine, and he just kind of just totally ignored it, and he ended up out. You know, basically the advice was, look, you need to get more women on your council. It needs to be at least half women. You need to get the kids involved. You need to teach the kids the language. You need to have a Cree language newspaper. Have the kids take it out to the elders and read it to them. And my friend told the chief, hey, if you do this, you'll get reelected. If you don't, you're going to be put out of office. And not only did that happen, not only him, but every other man was put out of office. And I understand the majority, if not all of the council are not women up there in that particular band. There's a bunch of bands up there. I won't mention the name of the band or any other names, but it's happening. And there's also the women up there are putting a stop to corruption. There had been some corruption a few years ago, and for the first time in forever, the women actually stood up and turned men into the Canadian government for corruption.
Wow.
Financial misdeeds. And because there's a lot of money involved, but from what I can see, Native people, when there's a lot of money involved, I know the Tigua had a problem with that down around El Paso. They would, you're just inundated with money, and they really don't know what the heck to do with it. And
right, because they've never had it.
Yeah, Don Jaime Perez. He's a mixed tech and medicine man, but he also has degrees like in economics. And if they had just taken that casino money and instead of doling it out to people in the tribe, if they would have built industries and they become owners of industry instead of, buying $250,000 homes and driving $100,000 cars, which they can't even pay the taxes or buy the gas for now because they lost their casino.
Right.
But Batty said, if all the casinos up here in the U.S. would give 5% of their income to the Indians down in Mexico and South America, he says it would just absolutely bring everybody out of poverty, because, you know, 5%, I mean, that would just change their lifestyle tremendously down there, and they, you know, they need, because, well, they do, because they're looking at the same kind of problems that American natives were looking at. They need money to run their governments. They've been given government-government relationships between their tribes and some of the nations down in South Central America, but in Mexico. But you've got these multinational corporations coming in, and you know, treating the Indians like the treaties don't even exist because of oil, mostly.
Right.
And so they sure could use the help, but it's I don't know. There's some real I don't know. I guess it's just kind of an attitude problem. Some natives up here just, you know, they don't even consider Mexicans as Indians, you know.
Right.
You know, they're as far as I'm concerned, they're way more native than a lot of the natives up here who have really become white.
Well, there's, you know, truth be told, Manny's latest book, Kokopelli's Dream, it's speculation and really what he felt in a vision, but from what he says of Kokopelli's journey, the native people actually migrated from Central and South America north, and he believes that many of the Sioux are actually people from the south that migrated north.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we know the Cherokee are. We live right alongside the Mayans, and we had to move up at the same time, about 1,500 years ago, and now they know that there was a drought down there at the time. And we know it's been about 1,500 years since we moved up, but we look differently than they did. You can go to CherokeeNationOfMexico.com. You can see ceramic busts, very clear Cherokee, kind of a turban, and the inverted nose rather than the aquiline nose. Cherokees tend to have kind of a skeet up nose, some of them, particularly Ketua clan, Wapitae's clan, and we've always been mixed. We've always been, had several colors. And even to this day, you can have Cherokee sisters that have the exact same amount of Cherokee blood. One will be blonde and blue, and blonde and brown, and the other one will be black and black-haired and brown-eyed. And, genetically, you know, they're just a Cherokee. But yeah, we came up from Mexico. Our origin stories say that we migrated from across the Eastern Ocean and landed in we had a island off the coast of South America, and we were warned that it was going to sink because the elders were abusing something called white fire. So some of us left by boat, and the island sank, and then but the ethnographers, they found pottery in the Orinoco Basin that's identical to traditional Cherokee pottery up here. That place is in Brazil and different places as we move north. But we've migrated back and forth from Mexico several times. Cherokee and Wampum belts are tied with Mexican seaweed. So we're... and after, you know, during the Dawes enrollment period, 1890s, we tried to get permission to the U.S. government to take our money that we got from sales of our eastern lands and move back to buy a colony and go back to Mexico, but they wouldn't let us go. So we've always had and that's where Sequoia was headed, and that's where he died, and all that was revealed not too many years ago. And the federal government in Mexico now recognizes Cherokees as a recognized tribe.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really kind of interesting situation. But their chief was a doctor in Matamoros. He was kidnapped last year, held for ransom. And there's, you know, that area close to the border, you know, there's a lot of, well, for a while the State Department was saying, hey, don't travel down there, there's just too much violence. There's a lot of kidnappings and murders. And just the area, you know, 1,500 miles from the border can be pretty dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, south of that, it's a different world in Mexico. And, but they had, they have yearly gatherings down there, I think, in mid to late February. But, yeah, CherokeeNationOfMexico.com. Check that out. It's really, really fascinating website.
It sounds interesting. I wasn't aware of any of that.
Yeah, we sure are. We sure are.
Well, this goes to show you once again that we truly are all related.
Right.
And if you go back far enough, I think we've all blended in together at one point along the line.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know it's getting pretty late where you are.
Yes, and I really enjoyed our talk. Maybe it went a little longer than you expected, but I find...
I'm always willing to talk as long as you want to. As far as I'm concerned, I conned you into talking an extra 20 minutes. So.
Well, yeah, I find the subject matter pretty interesting, and I hope that maybe you got a little insight, or your listeners got a little insight into something that they maybe hadn't thought of, or
sure.
Walk away with some information that may help them along their journey.
Absolutely. Well, we sure appreciate you being a guest, Melody.
Anytime, Blue Otter, and I'll fill you in on Manny's adventures maybe next time we get together on the air. He can tell you firsthand what sort of things happen.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to. We'll be home in a couple of days. But we've been worried about him. There's been, in the last few weeks, Robert Goswell told me, well, you know, my wife had a high blood pressure induced. We thought it was a mini stroke a week ago, Wednesday, and it turned out to be something called it was just the most intense headache. She didn't think your head could hurt that bad. And but it's something called a hypnic headache, and it only comes on in people around 65, and it comes in the middle of the night, usually between 1 and 3 a.m., and that's when it hit her. But I had all of the symptoms of stroke, you know, the slurred speech, the lot, you know, memory, just, I mean, I thought she was having a stroke, but then after they got to the hospital, the only thing she responded to was migraine medicine, but it wasn't a migraine either, it's just something a little bit different, but in talking with Ghost Wolf, he said there's been six or seven, you know, either the elder or his spouse had been attacked this way in the last few weeks. So there's something going on.
Yeah, even Benny LeBeau said that in one of his emails to Manny and I about how a lot of elders are being taken home right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he really has to watch himself and how he handles stress. And that was the bottom line to it all. He was just stressed out because he'd been pulled away from, he'd had a lot of health issues this year. He's had his gallbladder taken out, and he's had tests and stemmed the stern, and he has been unable to do very much work, and if he isn't out there doing the work, there isn't any income coming in. So it was stressing him out. It was sort of a catch-22, and he couldn't do anything about it. He had to take the time out to heal. And it just was stressing him out more and more. So I think once he gets back from this trip, from what I hear, he's feeling a lot better. And he'll be back in the saddle and probably, you know, visiting towns and doing lectures and workshops like he was doing before.
Good.
And he's got a new book coming out.
Oh, good. Good.
So,
well,
it's something for people to hear about soon.
Yeah, that's good too. And we'll look forward to talk talking with him after he rests up a little bit and has a vacation from his vacation.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Blue Otter. I appreciated the time and being able to share some things with you and your listeners.
Thank you so much.
And I wish everybody all the best in this coming time.
Well, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Take care.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Let the truth